Welcome to Leveling Up with Lindsay, the podcast where we dive into leadership, small business, and everything in between. I'm Lindsay, your host and the proud owner of White Peony Boutique, a space created to empower women, build confidence, and foster meaningful connections. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a mom, a friend, or someone just looking for a little inspiration, this is your space to feel seen, supported, and inspired. Join me as we share stories, strategies, and a little bit of life's chaos while navigating what it truly means to level up in starting a business, relationship, and personal growth. So grab a cup of coffee, get comfy, and let's level up together. Today's episode is really special because it's with someone who I not only adore as a friend, but deeply admire for the way she shows up authentically, courageously, and full of heart. Chelsea is a model and influencer for White Peony Boutique, a wife, a mom of two, and one of those people who just radiates light. She's also incredibly real about the hard stuff, the trauma, the anxiety, the healing, and everything that comes with rediscovering yourself as a woman and a mom. We're diving into something layered and powerful today. How our bodies hold on to what we've walked through, how growing up in a performance culture as athletes shapes our identities, and how we can shift from performing to being present. This one's for every woman who's ever felt like she had to keep pushing, even when her body was begging her to slow down. Well, welcome, Chelsea. Thanks for being here with me today. I am so excited. I've known Chelsea for some time as a White Peony influencer. We went on a marketing trip or a buying trip together. We've had hilarious moments. We've had journeys in our life together. And I'm just really excited to sit down and talk with you today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So I will get into our topic, but I do want Chelsea to kind of introduce yourself and who you are, what makes you tick, all the good stuff.
Well, I'm currently residing in Cold Spring, Minnesota. I'm originally from up north. My kids, I have two kiddos, and I'm a fiance, not yet gotten to the wedding, but to be determined. I manage over at Cape Hour Yoga. I've been doing that for 3 years. I've always been in the fitness industry as far as career goes. And obviously here as an influencer and model with you, that has led us many different directions.
Seriously, it's so awesome. So I think one of my favorite conversations with Chelsea, and something that I've reached out to Chelsea for, is talking a little bit about health and wellness. So today, Chelsea is here. We're going to talk about healing, identity, and honestly listening to your body through a lot of different journeys. So I'm going to start with bringing up a story, a monumental story in your lifetime, as when you were in the NICU with your daughter. So let's start there. I love how passionate you get in regards to this and the details. So please tell us your story about your journey through that experience.
Yeah, it's a big one, monumental to say the least. Try my best not to get too emotional, but it'll probably happen. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I have my son, Jonathan, who's 7 now, and my pregnancy and journey with him was very typical. Mm-hmm. My kids are 17 months apart. So when I got pregnant with Ella, everything was normal until it wasn't. And she ended up coming 3 months early.
Wow.
That was placenta abruption, which alone that night of was terrifying. I thought actually that I was having a miscarriage, but I went to bed that night and I very clearly remember telling my fiance, John, I don't feel very well. I just feel off. And we're just laying there, lights off. And the next time I woke up was when I realized something was very off. I got up without giving too much detail. I knew I had to go in immediately. And we had Jonathan at home. So I told John, I said, you stay here. I have to go in. And I was, you're tired, you're groggy, but you know something's wrong. And I knew I had to go. So I went to the ER, and what felt like a mile long walk when I got in, they're like, do you need a wheelchair? And I said, I don't think so. And they walked me back, and I probably shouldn't have been walking
in hindsight.
Sure. We got into the room, and immediately, especially in hindsight, I was kind of trapped in my own mind at that time. But now when I can see the facial expressions and I can see how many people were in and out of my room. I should have known that something was more wrong, but I didn't. So they strapped me up to the monitor and her heart was beating, so this was good. However, symptoms of bleeding is very common in a placenta abruption, which again, I'm very thankful that I did have the bleeding because some situations do not have that and you don't know that you have abruption. So I had that bleeding, therefore they were trying to get it to stop. They were monitoring me very closely and told me straight out, you need to let us know if you do have more bleeding. If you feel it and somebody's not in the room, you need to tell us immediately. And that kept happening. So things escalated. It was there for a very brief amount of time before things were escalating. And they brought me into the family birthing center where things clicked. And I knew, okay, I'm going to either stay here for weeks. They're going to keep me here for weeks, or I'm not sure what's going to happen. And things kept escalating. And I was dilating at that time. And they were trying to give me the steroid shot. And they did get it to me, but it was minutes later where it was like, nope, this isn't, that things are happening too fast. And they started to put the C-section suit on me when you have to be prepared. And I did have a C-section with Jonathan, so I was familiar with that, but things were rolling in my brain. I'm like, she's not old enough. Like, she's 3 months early. Like, is she going to survive this? And what I didn't realize is that if they weren't to do that, we both weren't going to make it.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know that in the time. And I think they do that on purpose to, you know, not put you in a panic state.
Sure. That makes sense.
So I called John a couple of times. So this is my second call. And I said, they have to take her out. Like, I'm going in. So he flew and he did end up making it by the time I had the surgery. They rolled me back and I was in and out at that point. I had lost so much blood and I wasn't fully functional or aware. I do remember going into the C-section operating room and I turned to whoever was next to me and I said, please just tell John.
Aww.
5 years later, you think it'd be a little easier to tell.
Brings up those raw emotions.
Yeah, but I wanted to make sure that I told him that I loved him. And that's essentially all that I remember. And next, I woke up in the recovery room and I tried to sit up and I was like, is she okay?
And just instantly.
Immediately, like, is she okay? And John was there. He goes, yeah, I saw her. Like, she's okay. She made it, which is just crazy to think about. But honestly, at that time, I didn't think there was... Personally, I didn't believe there was another option. Like, she has to survive.
Right.
And I feel like that's where some of, you know, trauma and what it was instilled in me truly happened, where from then on, there was no other option. Mm-hmm. She's alive. She's going to make it. So that started our NICU stay. Mm-hmm. I recovered there for some time, and they wheeled me all the way down to the NICU, where you can see her. And that began the 99-day stay in St. Cloud NICU. That journey was so long, so incredible, so scary, because it was also the year of COVID.
Oh, gosh, I forget about that.
COVID lockdown happened less than 2 weeks later.
Horrible. I forget about this part in this story, and that is like the unimaginable. So you had, first and foremost, what your body went through in that moment. And that, you know, experience was nothing short of absolutely traumatic. And little did you know, the extent of it was far greater and more extreme, like going into that. And the funniest thing, as a mom, you instantly wake up and your first instinct was, where's my baby? Like, how is she immediately? And then as you're explaining the story too, and I'm sure you went through an incredible healing journey, but your number one, like you said, was your survival mode for your baby girl and praying that she's okay. So she was in the NICU for 99 days. As you're recovering and going through this and then kind of watching her, tell us a little bit about that, especially like continuing with the COVID restrictions.
Yeah. The first month was critical. There was so much so many hurdles that she had to jump through. She had some things going for her. The steroid shot that they tried to give me did not reach her in time, so her lungs were severely underdeveloped. However, you know, she was on oxygen and she was 2 pounds, 2 ounces, which at that time was actually heavy, big for the gestational age she was born at. So she had some things going for her, some little extra strength to go off of. Our doctors were, our team was so incredible. They informed us of things that we were looking at possibly happening. They were very truthful and honest, but in a way that you could digest. So we met every single morning with her team of doctors and discussed where she was at, what they were going to try today, or just kind of let her be and monitor, et cetera. So that was every single morning. She ended up, you know, she was such a fighter, but yet at the same time, her body didn't know what to do. It was, it wasn't able to function to its fullest capacity by any means, that she coded like many times.
Oh, wow.
There's steps that they take and there's like one, okay, there's two, and then there's three. And I was very thankful that I wasn't there for any of them.
Oh.
Because I think that would have truly even more sent me over the edge watching that, or even considering that the steps weren't going to work. The first month was extremely critical, and she went through many of those episodes, and she had brain bleeds that we had to monitor and hope that didn't spread. Many diagnoses that when children are born that early and with these situations, we were looking at a lot of disorders or being disabled. So that was what we were kind of expecting right away, and that's what they have to kind of give you that insight. Yeah. First month, got through it. John and I were both there every day. We were very, very lucky to be working at places that were just go, you know, step away, go, don't worry about a thing. And we had so much community support, family support. But yeah, 2 weeks after she was born, we got grandparents in there. We got her baptized. We got, you know, my best friend, you know, so a lot of the close family came within those following days. But then there was no more visitors allowed once COVID shutdown hit. And so that first month of shutdown was a constant battle between like center care battling the government and what do we do and what do we allow? And so she's a good friend of mine now, but she battled so hard for the NICU because all departments in the hospital aren't the same, therefore shouldn't have to fall under the same rules. That included masks, that included visitors, that included everything. And she fought so hard for us. And by the third month that we were there, it was only one parent per 24 hours. So John, the big heart that he has, allowed me to be there as long and as often as I wanted. And when I needed a break and just needed to be at home with Jonathan, because mind you, we have him at home, that we're still trying to create such normalcy for. Luckily, he was young to where he didn't know.
Sure.
But yeah, I stayed there as long as I possibly could. And then I'd go home. He'd pop in. He went a lot of nights because I still wanted to sleep and needed to sleep. So that whole third month was frustrating, to say the least. But I mean, she was improving slowly. One of the other biggest battles that she had, even after we got to take her home, was her eyesight. That was a huge thing. And it's just terrifying slash incredible who they bring in, these pediatric specialists that can do what they do. Their eyes obviously are underdeveloped. And when it's disrupted, they get lots of lumps and bumps and blood vessels that clump together that can't then connect to the rest of the eye like normal. And we were looking at actually like glaucoma, what they do for glaucoma, and basically restarting all of her blood vessels. It kills them all and starts a regrowth.
Oh, wow.
And we looked at that. I mean, she was looking at that for probably the first 9 months of her life. So I'd say the third month was definitely about that and her getting her to eat, and hopefully to eat from a bottle before she could go home. I laugh at the thought of that last week. We had no like end in sight, but that last week, and they told me she might be able to go home by Saturday. And I'm like, who's she going home with? Because it's not me. I am not ready. That instilled a whole different fear in me, because I had kind of found that confidence and that trust and comfort in the hospital.
Sure.
And when they told me that, I panicked completely, and I did not trust my capabilities to bring her home.
She's still so little.
Yeah.
Going through all the trauma that you went through, body, but with your daughter in the journey that she'd still face, that would be so frightening for anybody.
Yes. I ended up getting a contact from a friend of mine who had gone through very similar, and her daughter's now, you know, in her 20s. And she gave me her contact information, and I'll never forget pulling up to the hospital that day. I called that lady, and I just panicked on the phone. I have no idea who you are, but I know you understand what I'm about to say, what I'm sharing with you, this fear. I made John go up, because it was only one of us that could go get her. I made John go up with the stroller. I said, I physically can't. I'm too terrified of losing her on the way down to our vehicle. Aww. And so I talking to this stranger on the phone, and she helped me so much, which is just incredible what a stranger can do for you. But she helped me, but that fear did not go away. One thing I don't want to forget to mention in all of this, all the fear and unknowns and feeling like you're lacking, like that was such a huge heavy feeling, like as a woman, and as you know, you're supposed to be able to carry your pregnancies. You also have just such a guilty feeling that I couldn't carry this, and I'm the reason why this happened to my daughter. That was big. But then on the other side, I just have to mention the advocacy that I ended up building for her in the hospital. Because not only, like, you do trust the specialists, experts, the doctors. Yeah. I mean, by no means would this be possible without them. However, being in there with her every second that we possibly could, we still knew her best. Mm-hmm. And I could still feel and trust my intuition to stand up, to say something, to be like, something's not right. Her nose piece, her oxygen, her, you know, like, you learn so much. But that was such a powerful piece for me, that no, I know I'm not the expert. But I'm still her mom, and you still had that connection, and she's in this plastic box, and you're, you know, like, it's incredible. So I'm so proud of that. And that has absolutely helped me beyond the NICU from there. So I don't want to forget to mention that piece.
That is incredible. It's incredible, you know, being as terrified, but then still standing strong in your voice a little bit, even when you're in so much pain yourself. That is incredible. And I know, and from an outsider and seeing you be the most amazing mama today, that never went away. The courage and the strength that you stood in at that moment, I would imagine only got stronger as time went on.
Yeah, absolutely. When we took her home, it was another moment that you're just like, there's no other way. We're going to do this. We took her home on oxygen. You know, she was barely eating from a bottle, tried breastfeeding, but her breathing just wasn't there. So we had a lot of different elements to try. I was scared to hold her for very long, because depending on the position that you hold them when they're on oxygen, it can, you know, cause lack of, I mean, we brought home oxygen tanks and lines of, you know, the tubes and all of these things to take home. But we did it. I mean, there was no other option. And that's where you just do it. And that in so many ways in our life, we just stand up and we just do it. And we did. And she got so much better. When she got home, there's something about where she knew she was at home. She knew she was in a different spot, no beeping and no a million people coming in and out all the time. So she improved very quickly. Oh, she was on oxygen for a very short time. She ate better. I mean, all of the things. She was interactive way more. So improvement happened fast. COVID was still there. I was terrified to have anybody over.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
They came over. I was like, do we have them wear a mask? Like, that feels so awful. But the alternative was all the unknowns. Like, if we don't, we caused this to happen, or sickness to happen, because when NICU babies get sick, they get sick. So we did eventually, you know, I don't remember if it was a month or two, but we stayed clear of anybody for a long time before visitors came, and we had the masks. And the first time I went out was in October. She came home in June. First time I went out without her or without either of my kids in COVID was October. So a lot of isolation, but necessary also. From there, I mean, we kept on it, foot on the pedal, did the best that we could, and her eyesight got better. I mean, and all of those diagnoses that we were scared of that should have happened, nothing.
That's amazing, an absolute miracle.
Yes.
A miracle. Going through such a traumatic time, and as a mother's instinct, and exactly what you did, is you covered up your own emotions just to do what you had to do every day in the moment and love up on that little baby. And I'm sure that covered up some pretty strong. You talk about panic attacks coming out after the fact and your body completely changing. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Let's see. She was born in 2020. It wasn't until 2022, 2023 that the panic, the anxiety, the body changes really hit me. It was like I hit a wall physically and mentally. But you can always look back after the fact and say, okay, there were signs. So that's the funny thing about trauma now that I went through that is it was always there. Even though time goes by, it doesn't mean that it lessens. It doesn't mean, you know, especially without any work, any acknowledgement in what happened. So I know that it was building. However, I can't remember if it was 22 or 23, I was at a job that I thought might be the issue and could it have, I loved my job, but as a manager of a place, I mean, I've always felt resilient. I've always felt like brush it off, you know, like dirt off my shoulder. And also just such a good perspective way to see all sides and high tolerance for anything that comes your way. That started escaping me. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely one of the biggest signs was my resilience.
I'm sure that's terrifying, especially when you know your own self, you know your body, you know your perseverance, and then for that not to naturally be able to combat that. I'm sure that was terrifying.
It felt like an out-of-body experience. It was so frustrating. It was scary. I had no answer, and I just thought, okay, I'm just going through a little something. We'll move, you know, a week will go by, 2 weeks will go by. This was months. I also had heart palpitations, which that was brand new. I've heard people talk about anxiety. You don't know until you know. And there's a lot of different versions, but I think heart palpitations and just that faster heartbeat in general, sleep disruption. I looked back and it was all there. And so therefore, I actually had to leave a job that I loved, but I wasn't physically, mentally able to keep that position anymore. I'm not able to upkeep. I feel like I'm doing a disservice at this point. And that was hard because I'm like, I can do this. I can push through. But my intuition was like, don't push through this. This is not something that you push through and try to hide. So months later, after I switched jobs, had less overall responsibilities, I was getting ready to actually go to a women's doctor. And because I never had heart palpitations, my body, I've always been in fitness and working out and able to, you know, kind of improve my body composition and all of that stuff based off previous years. And I wasn't able to do that anymore. And there was just these aligning and adding up things. And I was getting ready to go to this women's doctor for my hormones. And on my way there, and I had my kids with me, my fingers start tingling.
Oh, scary.
My heart rate just blasted through the roof. I got dizzy. I was on a main highway and just fear ran through me. And I said, I felt it for a while because I'm like, okay, is this going to pass? But it wasn't. And it felt like minutes and minutes and minutes, terrifying. But I don't know what it was, but I got so dizzy and out of body again that I couldn't physically drive. So I pulled over on the highway and it still was rolling. And I just told my kids, just need a minute. And I take some deep breaths. I have a lot of breathing tools, breathing techniques that I've learned throughout my life. I tried it all. I tried, you know, kind of touching my face and touching different things, which is anxiety learning there too. And nothing was working. I was spiraling and spiraling. But yet I'm like, I can't sit on the side of the highway with my kids. If I thought I was dying.
Oh, scary.
I thought if I stay here and I don't make it, my kids are going to get hit by someone who doesn't see us, or they're going to try to get out of the car. And oh my gosh, it just spiraled so heavily that I was like, I just need to make it to a spot my kids are safe. So got back on the highway, and we were 19 miles away from the nearest ER.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how fast I went. I don't even know what happened in that. Thank God I didn't hit somebody. Made it to the nearest ER, got us all out of the vehicle. And I thought, well, at least I'm near hospital if I need it. But I didn't want to go into the ER because I knew this was so much deeper at that moment. I knew what I needed help with was deeper than honestly what some of the things I thought a modern ER would give me.
True.
And I didn't want my kids trapped in an ER. So there were so many things circulating. So we got out of the car and I walked around a little bit, and I felt like I came down a little off of what I have to believe was a panic attack. I called John. We have friends who lived in that town. And he's like, I'm going to have so-and-so come in, grab the kids. What are you going to do? What do you want to do? And I said, I have to make it to my appointment. Because I knew what this doctor had done for others and what she focused on. I was like, obviously I have to go for more than just the reason I was already going. And that was an additional 20 miles away. So I calmed down. I said, I can make it there. And they did come and get my kids. They're good friends of ours, thank God. And
what a blessing.
Yeah, they took my kids so I could make it the rest of the way. And I made it, bless, and I spent 4.5 hours there.
You're kidding me.
No.
Wow.
And they gladly allowed me to stay. They took the best care of me. I'm so grateful that I just had push to just make it there because there's no way it would have been that experience, and there's no way that I could have gotten on the journey that I did if I just hadn't made it. Shout out to Well & Co. Incredible people there. I mean, that's what I'll call them because I'm not going to say they're just a practitioner. Absolutely. They were humans with me that day, and they allowed me to come off of that and aid in me in ways that you just wouldn't have gotten elsewhere. Surrounded by women too, it's just such a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. So that started my journey with my hormones, with my cortisol, with trauma. Dealing with everything you have in your life up to now, not just the NICU. It's it added up to that moment, and my body had said, was telling me a lot at that time. And now I know that it was trying to keep me safe. I was so scared of anxiety for so long. And anytime maybe a anxiety attack or something was building, I could recognize it and thank my body for telling me. So shout out to anyone out there with anxiety, a lot of stress, trauma. That anxiety is a gift, even if sometimes doesn't feel like it. It's
really
aiding
good perspective.
You. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the hormonal shift, and I mean, just learning so much about my hormones started at that time. Mm-hmm. Highly suggest, kids or no kids, our hormones change so much. And so I did get on that journey from there.
So it's pretty extreme, you know, for your body to completely kind of shut down in a way. But I love your perspective as far as anxiety goes. Now, listening to your hormones, tell me a little bit about, like, you know, moving forward with that journey. And what did that look like after your appointment? Like, what steps did you take? I think that could be beneficial for someone who's kind of been through the journey or maybe starting to experience that could seek out maybe assistance.
Yeah. First with my hormones, I mean, they do the typical check
panel.
Then they start the deeper dive with blood testing first, which is a very, you know, when something doesn't feel right, it's a very common thing to get blood panels. However, I'm sure I will speak to some masses out there, blood panels only check so much. there are normal ranges. However, there's a lot to be unpacked, even in a normal range. So we did do the blunt panels just to get that layout. But then because that doesn't tell everything, I also ended up doing the Dutch test, which is urine. Mm. So you take that home and throughout the whole day, and you also have to plan it around your menstrual cycle. They give you great directions. It's very easy to understand and you follow them. So 4 or 5 times throughout the day, you give urine samples. You send it to the lab and the results come back. A huge pamphlet of information that if you don't have somebody to go through that with you and help you understand, you never would. You would look at it and have zero idea, which is also another issue when you get blood panels. It's just giving a lack of overall information. So it came back with progesterone, testosterone, estrogen being 3 of the main focuses, and then also your cortisol levels based on a 24-hour period.
Okay.
And that 24-hour period is really important because typically when we wake up, your cortisol spikes because it's there to, okay, what do we got to handle today? Mm-hmm. And you're also just naturally thinking about what everything else comes after you wake up, especially as women. You're already going through all the things that you got to do. You're naturally stressed about the day ahead. So your cortisol does spike in the morning, but then based on how resilient you are, what happens in your day, the environment around you, your cortisol goes in a roller coaster, or at least it should. Mine plateaued. Mine was...
Stayed high.
Yes. It stayed high. It did not take into consideration what I was handling or not handling. Mm-hmm. It was completely stagnant, which is not a good thing to happen. It goes back to my resiliency. That's a huge reason why I felt like I just was not resilient and able to handle so many things anymore. And I cry all the time, which, hey, cry. Crying is good. Let it out. But when you know who you are, it's like, man, why am I just feeling extra soft? So that aligned and it already was giving me some answers that I hadn't had in so long. And then I also had a estrogen surge. So estrogen, you know, if we have more, we're more emotional. Mm-hmm. I had a lack of testosterone, which adds up once again. You know, we don't have as much as males do, but we do need a little to, again, make us resilient, make us stronger and able to handle things. And then my progesterone was also extremely low. So progesterone is, I mean, they're all equally important, but that is something that then lacks because estrogen is taking over. So I learned so much, which was beautiful and so relieving because I felt like something else was wrong with me for so long. And so finding those answers was a huge relief. And there's more to unpack in that Dutch test, incredibly a lot more, especially about cortisol and how your body handles it and flushes it. And so from there, got all of that information, and then Well & Co. suggested certain supplementation. Mm-hmm. I do applaud them, Well & Co., for trying to find out more holistic, if that's what I'm searching for, which it was. I wanted to find root cause, and this was giving me root cause. We talked about supplementation and this is what can combat, and they drew the line to everything and how it was all kind of coming together. So I felt confident in my decision. I didn't feel like we were guessing, and we moved forward, and it wasn't supplementing an actual hormone. You can supplement hormones. That may be a path that you need or can go. But in this case, I could use supplementation to encourage the correct processes that my body can. It just needed that extra help and support to push things through panels that were just overloaded. Same thing with your lymph nodes and flushing out your body, that energy buildup, it makes things stuck and sludgy.
Very interesting. So Well & Co., I'm very well aware of this business. I would recommend, you know, as we're not experts, to seek out somebody to maybe go through this journey with you and find the right fit, because I've gone through my own journey with, you know, hormones and listening to my body, and I've been told answers that I was just not okay with accepting. And even, you know, with the panels and uncovering, I had to fight to get a hormone panel. I was tried to be talked out of that many, many times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I just want, like, we're doing it.
Yes.
We're going to pay for it. We're going to move forward, because I was just so sick of feeling the way I was. And I also realized, I'm like, this isn't me. It's cool, because even at a young age, you kind of develop and you figure out you're still growing. You're still learning about you. You're still standing a little bit, or working on standing stronger in you, who you are and your strengths, but you still, your instincts are valid.
Oh my gosh. Your intuition is an incredible tool. And in so many cases is so right. And I agree, to advocate for yourself, even like I said, in the NICU, there's experts surrounding us everywhere. But when you know, and you have a right to speak up about that, and you have a right to, you know, maybe I went to Well & Co and I did this process and it didn't work.
Right.
That's it. It's disappointing, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. Pivot, you know, next journey, like keep looking and asking questions. And there was a lot of people that I talked to prior to going to Well & Co. It wasn't just like, well, we'll go here. Well, we'll see how it goes. There was a lot of talk, but I felt that empowerment to speak up and to keep going, because like you, I found dead ends.
Yeah. You've got to do your research. You've got to stand stubborn almost in figuring out what makes you the best you. So in whatever that looks like. Now, let me tell you, from we've had other conversations and your intuition on your body journey. We talk about this, you and I, even from back in high school days a little bit, in being athletes. And how has that changed over time, in your opinion?
Drastically. Drastically, you can track it back. I think when you're younger, your intuition, maybe you're not as confident in following it. However, when you're an athlete, you find either a silent confidence, or in being a team player, you stick up for your teammates, showing up for your teammates. You're performing for your community when you play a game, holding up standards for your parents, maybe, or, you know, somebody that's just holding you on a pedestal almost when you're playing. But your intuition when you're younger looks and feels so much different, but it's still the most powerful tool. Like, if I can encourage or instill one thing into young people, it would be that your intuition is still valid. Just because you're young, it is there for a purpose and to serve you. So it trickles into the sports play. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think, like, you are building a relationship almost with your body. Like, when we're young and we're like in shock about life, that kind of experience with time and listening to what's going on and being more aware. I think you become more aware through, you know, you're young and there's new experiences and your body changes, and then you're going through sports and you're an athlete and there's pressures of the world and there's this and that, but you're still listening to you. And then you move forward and then you go through an experience like you did with your baby and or babies. And then you're listening further. You have more experience under your belt and you're just standing a little taller in your own advocacy. But I think there's a big old question mark still out there. You know, we're seeking answers constantly, even at a young age, even as an athlete.
I think on body image, the pressures of when you are younger in general, even if you're good at handling it, even if you're very successful, happy individual in your youth, there's still things happening to you, around you, that your body, it's taking in. I mean, whether you like it or not, or you're aware of it or not, you're taking that in. And to me, I don't always like to say trauma, but it's instilling more negative energy in your body. And when you're young, you're like, oh yeah, it's coming in, no big deal. Again, you're able to brush it off. But if you can instill someone in it at a young age that even though you're really good at shaking it off, those pressures still instill some trauma in your body. The sports play, not only physically, but mentally, as you get older, that doesn't just go away. And when you get older and then you're out of high school or you're out of college and now you're done playing, I know we've talked about this before, the loss. It almost feels like a grieving.
Going from the sports that Chelsea and I loved to not having that. Yeah, it's a whole thing in its own, trying to figure out who you are. It's
scary.
It is scary.
You have to find who you are after high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, after high school, it doesn't even have to be in a sport.
I think I was so sad. I was so excited to go into college and like go through the college experience, and I didn't play sports in college myself, but I was very sad that I did not. Mm-hmm. Very sad.
I graduated high school. Yeah. There's so much pressure and drama in high school when you were playing sports that I said, I'm done. I wanted to, I could have, you know, all that stuff. So I actually took a year off, and then the following year I ended up playing, the following 2 years I ended up playing volleyball, basketball, and softball. And it was fantastic, but it was a different experience, a much different experience in good ways and in not so great ways. But I felt that need and that longing to be an athlete. Or I also know that I had instilled in me, either personally or from people around me growing up, that I wanted to perform in a game. I wanted to feel what that felt like again, and to make people proud, and to, you know, have that attention overall on you when you're a good player. I missed that camaraderie in the team and just playing. However, I do see how that, playing in a sport, growing up all your life, not playing it, playing it again, and then again finding your own identity after, has leaked into my relationships even after everything.
Oh, I agree with that.
And I think it shaped my love languages.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes complete sense. So going through as an athlete, all the pressure coming back. Obviously, it's something that you genuinely loved. But even then, I just think about what we were talking about of like listening and honing in on your body and things. We've had these conversations where you were so excited. You didn't. So you took a break. You went back into sports. You had pressure, a lot of pressure too as an athlete. And I'm just so curious, you know, like how you kind of got through that. So you went through everything with your sports. When did you slow down to kind of recognize, like, yes, you're excited, you loved it, but to pause because you were a huge athlete, pressure, you had Ella and, you know, your son, and there's a lot of trauma there. Like, there's a little bit of trauma involved even when it came to the sports side of things. Absolutely. I love it. I would never take that for granted. Mm-hmm. I love everything about the lessons we've learned and the people we've become because of sports. You and I talked about that. That's something we hold true to our character that we love so much. But there is pressure. And sometimes we cover up what our body is telling us, you know, with that
in
pressure.
That athlete world, absolutely. Yeah. Physically, mentally. I think when I was done playing sports, there was part of me that was ready to take on a new journey, for sure. However, career-wise, that could go a lot of different directions. And when I was done playing, I remember going through a panic stage, a disappointed, like, I should know, but I didn't. But I also, at that point, I mean, what was I, 21 years old? I knew it was okay not to know, or I instilled that in myself, which is great. But I think it stems from being built up in the sports and in the confidence and all of that. I think that's kind of full circle moment, but I knew it was okay not to know. I personally found out then that I was not the type just to do it. So I made sure I didn't pressure myself in one direction or the other when I was done with that college stage and the sports. I found league. We always can play league, but then we probably get hurt. I have always believed it, and I've stayed true to it, that I never want to force myself because someone says so, or that's what you're supposed to do, society says. Therefore, I have followed my intuition so deeply. I've advocated for myself, but it honestly changed so much when I became a parent. You find such strength that you did not know existed, and it's a different kind. It's a silent strength. It's what you don't know is there until things start popping up. That wasn't without fail, though. I mean, from 21 to when I had my first kid, I was 30. There was a lot of years of not so great things. That roller coaster that I just accept. I'm so glad that I got to go on up and down more or less a roller coaster of emotion, of things that happened, of people around me, of loss, of a lot of happiness that built me into who I then could become when I was 30 and I was having my first child. And it only blossomed everything I already was. And I used the tools that I learned from a young athlete all the way through all of those things I just mentioned to being who I am today and feeling so good and so confident about even when I physically and mentally feel down, not myself, because just because I went through the process I did for my hormones and my trauma, I did counseling, doesn't mean it's not ever there. I accept the roller coaster. I don't accept someone else's answer for my journey.
That is so good. And I don't know, honestly, it's like mic drop, Chelsea. So I think so many of us walk away from this conversation with one powerful reminder that real strength isn't about pushing harder, it's about listening closer.
Absolutely.
Whether it's through motherhood, healing, or redefining who we are at the end of the game, we can't lead from a place of burnout or disconnection. We lead best when we're present, in tune with our bodies, our hearts, and of course, our purpose. So to anyone listening today, give yourself permission to rest, to heal, and to honor your body as your greatest teacher. Advocate for yourself. You don't have to perform to be worthy. You already are. So thank you for being here with
Beautiful.
Me, Chelsea.
Absolutely.
I feel like we're going to have to do another episode of just the athletic part in itself.
There was a lot. Yeah, there's a lot to be.
So we will be back together again. We have to be because we could talk for hours.
Yes, absolutely. I'd be happy to return.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you found this information helpful, please share it with a friend. If you're looking for more information on the topics we covered, please head to the show notes below. And if you wouldn't mind leaving a 5-star rating and review, this would help this mission and our journey to get started. Let's make today and every day an opportunity to level up. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep striving, and keep making a difference.